scientific career studying aging in animals and the effects of various types of input on aging or the lifespan of animals. It turns out that radiation may shorten the lifespan of animals, and in fact for quite a while many people thought that maybe they finally had a tool to study aging. It's been a very difficult problem. It isn't quite true, but it has been a useful means for studying aging, I guess. And then I think the more important part for you is how do we face aging ourselves? I mean, what should our attitude be towards it? And how should we handle our mother and dad in regards to this? And how should we plan it for ourselves? Most of us have to face this. Most of us have to face aging. We hesitate to do this. For my part, I don't like the alternative. And that's to die young. Okay? So, I guess we hesitate to face it. Like I remember the story about it was an exclusive club, and I think it was a country club in the East, and this fellow was a traveler, so he was sort of in and out of the club, and he'd been gone for quite a while, and one day he came back. They had a big party, and he looked across the room, and there he saw an old friend of his. It was a lady, a middle-aged lady. And so he went charging across the room and says, "Oh, it's really good to see you. I haven't seen you for 5 years, you know." She says, "Yes, and I've gotten 1 year older." and that's sort of how we look at it, you know. So this is an issue we'll face. I hope we get into some discussion on this, on how we handle it. Because I've had to recently face this, and I've handled my parents and my wife's parents essentially the way I'd like to be handled myself. If I ever get this old, my wife predicts I'll die very young. How about that? Maybe just wishful thinking. No, I'm kidding, of course. She's here. Before I begin, as I often do, I turn to George MacDonald, who I regard as one of the great clerics of the modern age. He lived in the 1800s. I often open my lectures with a reading from him, and usually from C.S. Lewis's diary, or anthology of C.S. Lewis, which is really great, and I usually carry a copy of this wherever I go. And L. Rognes, Dr. Rognes, sent me the Diary of an Old Soul, which has been republished, which is a wonderful thing. It's sort of a little poem for every day of the year. And I'll read from January 1 and October 16. "Lord, what I once had done with youthful might, had I been from the first true to the truth, grant me now old to do with better sight and humbler heart, if not the brain of youth. So wilt thou in thy gentleness and ruth lead back thy old soul by the path of pain round to his best, young eyes and heart and brain? Now I grow old and the soft gathered years have calmed, yea dulled the heart's swift fluttering beat. But a quiet hope that keeps his household seat is better than recurrent glories fleet. To know thee, Lord, is worth a many tears, and when this mildew, age, has dried away, my heart will beat again as young and strong and gay." And then probably in our attitude towards the aged, I will read from the anthology on love. "It is by loving and not by being loved that one can come nearest to the soul of another." So much for that. Now, first I probably have to define the issue, and that is the issue of aging, and this is marked by a decrease in vitality and an increase in vulnerability with the passage of time. Now, maybe that doesn't tell you much. You can best probably look around and see it. It's characterized by a decrease in the number of cells in the central nervous system. There is organ atrophy. There's increase in usually in the amount of fat and connective tissue in the body. There's sometimes an increase in cellular pigment. There is a decrease in muscular strength, in reaction time, in fertility, oxygen utilization, cardiac output. There's a deterioration in vision and hearing. There's a reduced adaptability to changes in one's environment. There's a slower recovery rate following injury. And I can go on to some more things. It sounds like it's completely a losing battle. But as I point out to my students, there is one overriding compensation, and that's with increasing age, there is a compensating increase in wisdom. So there. In fact, I told this to my class, many of them are graduate students, and in the testing over the subject matter, and I did also ask some questions about aging, and I asked them to define their favorite theory on aging, you know, or describe aging and choose their favorite theory, and one of them went to some length to tell about the increase in wisdom. And so it's sometimes hazardous to be humorous, although this wasn't said in complete tongue-in-cheek. Now, when one talks about the various hypotheses, whenever somebody tells you, well, these are the hypotheses on aging, you know immediately we don't know what aging is. You see. We don't know what causes it. There isn't one organ sort of that you can say, well, you're going to die because this is going to fail on you, you know. In some people it might be the kidneys, somebody else the heart, and somebody else maybe the brain. I mean, there's a whole assortment of things that might catch up to you. There isn't sort of one failing. And this has led a lot of people into speculating on what are the causes here. And so I'll go through a few of these. The first one is that, and this has been a favorite for a long time, they say, well, you take in a lot of toxins during your lifetime, and these eventually catch up with you. And for a long time, Metchnikov and some of the Russians and thought it was just all this that was happening, say, within our elementary tract. The things that might be going on there. There's toxins absorbed with time, and these accumulate, and eventually it catches up with you. And this caused some people for quite a while. I know in my youth, you were really with it if you were drinking Bulgarian buttermilk, you know, because they went down to Bulgaria, you know, and they saw all these old people down there. And they thought, boy, what are these people doing, you know, that's really, really making them so, I mean, you know, keeping them alive so long. And so we were drinking cultured buttermilk. Because I still drink some buttermilk, and the chief does this every day, except when she's in Holden. That's probably why she looks younger than me. That's one of the reasons. But they were drinking cultured buttermilk. I was drinking cultured buttermilk. And because, you see, the idea was to change the flora of your GI tract, and maybe it'll sort of work against all these toxins that are being produced. Well, the truth of the matter is, somebody went down to Bulgaria and checked them out, you know. And it wasn't that they were, the people there were much older, they just looked older. this kind of thing is marked as aging bit. Another favorite theory, held by some friends of mine, and certainly has some things to go on for it, is that with time, there's an accumulation of obstacles to filtration, metabolism, transport, and diffusion. You know, in order to survive, you know, I mean, all our cells, or most of our cells, should be functioning. And in order for them to function, they have to have nutrition from the bloodstream, huh? All right, to get the material from the bloodstream, from the small capillaries to the cells, it has to diffuse and cross a few membranes and this type of thing. And these people propose that with the passage of time, there is a change sometimes in the structure of some of these membranes. I won't go into this, but our body consists of a lot of collagen, and there is a change with collagen, in collagen with time, and there's some cross-linking and so forth. And it does have some things going for it here. Also, there's probably an increase in the lay down of extracellular, that is, material outside the cell, tissue-type structures that does obstruct the transfer of material from the bloodstream to the cell. And one can show this to an extent if one slices the tissue thin enough and studies it. We notice this, for example, with certain toxins that you can give, certain radiation. It appears that this does occur. It's kind of a hard thing to really prove, but this, of course, would slow certain function. And of course, there's a lot of emphasis on experimentation now with membranes of cells. So for a long time, people thought, well, all this cellular material, what's important is on the inside, and you think of it sort of a sausage casing, you know, holding the cell together. Well, this is changing. This cell membrane is a very dynamic structure and a very important one, and there may be something happening there. Another proposal is that there's an exhaustion of a fixed reserve. In other words, if you examine most of the animals, you'll see that they burn up a certain number of calories per gram during their lifetime. And when this is sort of utilized up or used up, that's the end of the line. Now, this is generally true among many of the mammals. Man, it's about double what most of the others are. And some people say that, well, there is sort of a fixed amount. They sort of liken it onto an automobile, you know, and it's just good for so many miles, and that's the end of the line. Well, there's some things that don't really add up here. But there are some people who hold to this theory. Now, for a while, there were some people who were proposing this, but then they felt that the work by McKay at Cornell sort of contraindicated this. And what McKay did before he died, and in fact he did it many years ago, some people have repeated it now, he took a number of rats, and when they were very young, he starved them. He had them on a very low caloric intake so that their maturation, their reaching adulthood, was postponed. In fact, he did this for about 900 days. If he carried on beyond that, some deleterious effects would occur in these rats. They'd develop blindness and a few other things. And then after about 900 days, he'd put them on full nutrition. And the result of this experiment is that he doubled the lifespan of the animals. Now, this is rather substantial, you see. I mean, this is significant, if you can double a lifespan. But a lot of people said, boy, I'd rather have enough to eat than to do it that way, you know. I mean, it's sort of take your choice. But, of course, this isn't, we haven't got a good experiment with people on this. And I don't propose probably that we try it. But it does say something to us, which I'll get around to near the end, on how you're going to ensure a long life. And I'll give my prescription for that. But that's what McKay did, and that's what some other people did. And what they were doing really was postponing maturation, you see. And they most people feel that, but once you get to adulthood, then the clock is sort of set. Now, I guess that sort of brings up the next one on sort of the clock being set, and when one talks about that, one almost has to get into the genetic apparatus, mutations, and this type of thing. Now, Barbara Collins is going to talk about this week for you, which relieves me of this responsibility because she teaches it and I don't. I try to keep up somewhat in this field. But a lot of people feel, of course, that And probably just as a, to give you some background on this, of course we have our gonadal apparatus, that is our chromosomes and genes related to our gonads, that is our ovaries and our testicles, which is carried to the future generation. This is one apparatus where the deleterious effects on your chromosomes or genes, of course, is continued, providing they survive. Of course, most chromosomal damage most of them are lethal, so there is usually no next generation or the particular chromosome in the cells that are affected are shed, although there are some mutations that occur and most of them are bad. Now that's the gonadal apparatus, and many people feel that this is how we are eternal. Our chromosomes and our genes are carried on into future generations. I'm not going to talk about that particularly, except to say this, and it goes back to the days of old man Pearl, who was an investigator, a biologist in the early 1900s. And I remember when Sir John Hammond visited us, he was one of the great men of animal science in the world, and from England. He died a couple of years ago. He was very old. And I was talking to him about the subject of aging, and I asked him what he thought about the importance of the genetic apparatus in this. And he said, well, he says, I remember talking to Pearl about this, and I asked him this question. He says, well, in order to guarantee long life, he says, you want to pick a mother that has a long life. Well, that's kind of hard to do. but the point is that there's a very good chance that if your parents live a very long time, there's a better chance that you will live a long time. See, at least you got something going for you. But if you behave yourself.
Leo, does that mean like there are hardier strains of wheat, there are hardier strains of people?
Yeah, that's right. And I'm glad you brought that up, because most of my talk today is discussing mammals, you see. I've often been impressed, you know. I live out in the country, and as I drive into work, or into the office or in the lab, I go by a grain field, you know. And this thing is nice and green for a long time, and suddenly, almost overnight, it turns brown. It's as if there's a clock set, and the clock runs out and it ripens. Well, this is true in most of the plant species, that when it fruits, that's the end of the line, and it's usually coated in this way. And some grains aren't this way. I mean, some plants aren't this way, like tomatoes. I mean, they'll ripen for a long period of time. If you prevent their ripening, the plant will last a very long time. It'll keep growing and growing if you keep it from coming to fruition. Of course, in California now, they're changing the tomatoes. They're since they don't have enough Mexicans to pick the tomatoes, the people don't like to stoop over in this country to pick tomatoes, they've decided to make mechanical pickers. But to make mechanical pickers, you have to have tough tomatoes, you know, that all ripen at once. So that's what they've done. The University of California, Davis, which is one of the big centers for plant physiology probably in the world, they between there and Mexico, they run down Mexico and plant some more. They get more crops down there, you see, so they can test out these various strains to get something that has kind of uniform size, that ripens all at once, and that isn't injured by a mechanical picker. They don't taste very good, but the main thing is that they can be picked. Can be picked. So that's what they've done. And on trees, of course, they're the longest-lived thing we have, isn't it? But what the tree doesn't know is that most of it's dead. It's only, you know, it's only that outer little bit, you know, around the tree that's alive. The rest of it's dead. Well, some people are like that. Coming back to the gene chromosomes, now, I mentioned the gonadal apparatus. Now, the soma, the rest of our cells, of course, are multiplying. Some of them are. Unfortunately, our central nervous system, there isn't much replacement of cells in the central nervous system. And this does complicate the picture a bit. Many of us aren't using a lot of what we got up there anyway. In certain other systems, there's a turnover every little while. In our GI tract, for example, and most of you probably figure this out. You know, you can have a real gung-ho bellyache, as we say, you know. I mean, you can really have a upset stomach, and within 24 or 36 hours, your alimentary tract is pretty much recovered again. Why? Well, it turns out that the lining cells of your alimentary tract, not so much your stomach, but certainly your small intestine, those cells turn over from 14 to 36 hours, probably. I mean, there's a complete replacement. So that's kind of a handy system. The thyroid, there's very little turnover. The liver, not so much, but if you can cut away the liver, it'll grow back very rapidly, and then there's a point it reaches when it quits it. And the muscle, there can be some growth in that. But the thing here is that on these parts that are replaced, such as your blood cells, which there again, you have a replacement very rapidly on some types of blood cells. They have varying half-lives. Some have only a few day half-life. Some of the blood cells, red cells, for most of you, is probably 120 days mean lifespan. It varies among the species. But here you see, if the cells are damaged, or the stem cells, then there will be a drop in them, or if the copying mechanism is affected, you're going to have some defective cells, you see, that may not work as good. You see, and a lot of people say that this is really what's happening with aging, that there are certain, what we call free radicals, toxins produced within the body, and some of the things that we take in, and some of these does affect our genetic apparatus of our somatic cells, cells of our body, and that the system, the replacement parts, are not as good. The replacing cells are not as good. Relative to the clock mechanism, then I'll get to you. I just want to mention this while I think of it. I have a few notes here, but not very many. I don't follow them anyway, but I have to say things when I think of them. And that is that it's very interesting, for example, to see various systems, how they are coded. And I'll give you a very good example of this. And it's a handy thing, because when a baby chick is inside the egg, there are some cells in the wing here that hold it down, you know, so that the chick can't start flying when he's inside the egg. This would compromise the situation, you see? Well, after the chick hatches, these cells die, releasing so the wings can go like this, you know? Well, somebody said, well, just what's the score here? And this is some of the things that biologists spend their time on. The fellow, he goes in and he takes these cells that are involved here, and he, instead of putting them on the, you know, he takes them off the wing and puts them somewhere else and studies, do they die somewhere else, you know? Well, they do die somewhere else. They have a coded timestamp, where this is the end of the line. So some people say, well, maybe that's true with some of our other systems. So maybe there's a copying mechanism, and it has a time set on it.
I heard that within 7 years, all the cells of our body are completely changed. Is this excluding the central nervous system?
Yeah. Well, no, that isn't really true. You have to look at it by system. There are certain white cells that are probably completely replaced within a matter of weeks, you know. There are some that last quite a bit longer. Our blood cells, the mean lifespan for us is 120 days. Our GI tract is probably completely replaced, say, every 2 days. And that is the lining cell. Kidney, not so much. Specialized cells. There's some indication that a few cells in the central nervous system may undergo replacement. In the thyroid, well, of course, there has to be a lot of growth there from the time that a child is 1 year old, when a thyroid weighs about 1.5 grams, up until it reaches adulthood at 15 to 20 grams. You see, so you have to take, it's very dangerous to say that, you know, because our skin, for example, undergoes rapid change.
About at what age would the central nervous system be pretty much complete?
Well, man, of course, is unique among the primates in this regard, and it's not till it's probably into puberty, I guess. I've forgotten now. What did it say in The Naked Ape, Chief? You read The Naked Ape. See, I don't study man very much. I can tell you about the rest of them. I just watch them. Yes, this is one of the theories that, and it's a little bit like on McKay's work, you know, once he's, if he could prolong the juvenile period, the years of maturation, he could really extend their lifespan, but the only extension he made was that by prolonging their maturity, once they were matured, then their lifespan from maturity on was sustained. And a lot of people say, well, you're starting to die the minute you're born, you know. Well, maybe in some ways this may be true for some systems, but others say, well, you start dying when you reach maturity. And maybe to an extent that may be true if it's useful in discussion. Now, I think that's enough for the genes, but you can... And some people, you know, on some of these, I mentioned free radicals. Now, some people have proposed that if you can give something that scavenges free radicals in the body, the peroxides and so forth, that you can extend the lifespan. Well, and there's a fellow at Nebraska named Harmon who's done some of this work, and he claims that he can really increase the lifespan of rats by giving some of these substances. This is fairly new information. But what I worry about him is that, and it's unfortunate rats have been used for this, and I'll be discussing some of this choice of the experimental subject tomorrow night, which is so important. Many people have used the animals to prove a point, and it doesn't mean a darn thing, you know? I mean, they choose the wrong animals. Much of the early work on the rat for lifespan study is ridiculous, because most of the rats they were using were sick to begin with. They had endemic respiratory disease. And all they were finding out is how animals die from endemic respiratory disease, you know? And it's absolutely ridiculous. And I've given a lot of people a bad time on this, and getting around to using some other animals now. But you can look at the data, and it's true that some of these animals that are disadvantaged like this, if you can do a lot of things to them and change their environment, you may increase their lifespan, but it may not do it to a normal rat, you know? Yes?
Speak of free radicals.
The peroxide. HO, for example, and things like this. They're an unpaired electron in the outer shell. Yeah. It's an unusual concept, but to get into it take me quite a while. It's just to say that there are such things produced, and they are produced, for example, in water, with radiation of water. And a lot of people say that this is the damage really that happens in the body due to radiation. You have the production of free radicals. Some of them are very short-lived, you see, but they do a lot of damage while they're there. They're essentially toxins. And that's why this fellow thought that because with radiation you get an aging phenomena change, that maybe there are free radicals produced by other things, and there are. We do have free radicals in the body. And if these are toxic, and if we can have something to scavenge these, such as if you're familiar in chemistry, and I think by your question you are, that some of the sulfur-containing amino acids, cysteine, cysteamine, things like this, do help in radiation protection somewhat. Now, let us look at some of how we handle this. I see another theory is that we have an effect on a complex feedback mechanism in the body, but we haven't got time for that. I got to get through some of this, and I want to show you some of the how some people handle the data. Now, one of the ways you handle data is to express it in a Gompert function. You don't have to remember this, but Gompert, a lot of people thought they discovered this, but they went back and read the literature and found out Gompert expressed it this way in 1815. And this is kind of a handy way to do it, so you can study a lot of animals. And what they have found, that if one looks at a population of animals or men, you find out that during his lifespan, and this is age-specific mortality, in other words, at this point, you're having a one out of... Oh, I got this backwards. At this time, one in 1,000 are dying in a population, one in 100 are dying, and one in 10. In other words, very early in life, there's a low incidence of death in a population, okay? And with time,
If you plot this, you see on a semi-log plot where for equal amounts here, you go up by a factor of 10. And these are, this is in a linear scale here in years. Or if you'd want to plot it with the short-lived animals in mice, that you have something that looks like this. It's a straight line. And although biologists can appreciate curves, they'd like to handle their data with straight lines. It's easier. All right. So you find out that this is how most age-specific mortality curves look like. And all this says is that as you get older, the probability of dying are greater. And biologists like these great truths. Now, it turns out that early in life, of course, there is a high mortality, and then it falls. And when you're in the teens and all, I mean, you're almost indestructible. And that's fortunate, because most of them are trying to destroy themselves. At least they really work at it. Now, this is only true in the advanced nations when we're talking about man. This would not be true in, say, India, where it never gets down this low. I mean, you have a pretty high risk too much of life. This is sort of the curve for Sweden, which is sort of down the lowest, in other words. And in fact, a friend of mine named Hardin Jones, at the University of California, Berkeley, has played a lot of games with this, and I'll show you the kind of games he played. And he studied a lot of human populations. And he says that this is sort of a female in Sweden, and now anything that you do beyond this, or any other place you live, you're sort of above this line, you see. And well, let's just take one of the common things that some of you do is you smoke one pack a day. Well, when you smoke one pack a day, you're on a new line. If you're smoking two packs a day, you're on another line. And this is sort of where you check in, you know. And if you're smoking one pack a day, roughly, you're getting there 6 years sooner. If you're smoking two packs a day, you get there 12 years sooner. And unfortunately, and I'll discuss this when I discuss cancer, it's some of these latter years are more uncomfortable too. Now, with radiation, well, let me say something on smoking. If you quit smoking, there is some tendency to come back to a curve that's lower. See what I mean? If you don't wait too long. Now, what does overweight do for you? Well, if you're overweight 20%, you're essentially on a new line. If you're a bachelor, you're on a new line. Your chances of dying are greater. When Hardin Jones told us about this, I challenged him on this, because my observation was, it all depends on who you marry. He agreed that this had something to do with it. If you're living in the city rather than the country, you're on a new line. You're also on a new line. And if you have radiation, of course, once you've had it on an acute dose, and this is pretty well worked out in the animals. If you gave a certain dose of radiation to an animal, either every day, certain part of its lifespan, or an acute dose, at least in the small animals, we can tell you how this happens, what happens to them, and I'll give you a little quantitation on this. But the sum and substance of Hardin Jones's thing is, if you really analyze it, it looks like this. If you compare a woman with children, and that's important too, if you have children, I know some of you parents that have teenage children, it's hard for you to believe this, but if you're a woman living in rural Sweden, has children, and you're also married, and you and you compare that the lifespan of that lady with, say, an overweight bachelor in Brooklyn smoking two packs a day, there's about a 35-year difference in lifespan. So that's how Hardin Jones played this deal. Now, I'm going to change the ordinate and the abscissa, that is the x and y axis here on this chart, and I'll tell you some of the things we do just an interest standpoint in our animals. And
no, I got to get you talking here very soon. One of the things that did at the University of California before I got there, we were concerned about some time ago, about flying a nuclear-propelled aircraft. This was in the 40s. With the Kennedy coming in, we scrubbed this program after we spent about $1 billion on it. I was in it from another aspect, just evaluating the hazards of such an operation. When they were thinking about this, they realized that the crew on this ship might receive up to 200 Rankins. Well, I told you the other day what 200 Rankins are. If you had an acute dose of 200 Rankins, you'd probably be sick. And it might shorten the lifespan, so. But they didn't know how much because all the data they had were on rodents, and this isn't very good data. So they said, well, we have to go with beagle dogs, and that's sort of how I'm in the beagle dog business. But for another reason, we're doing other things. But they set up an experiment, a long-term experiment on beagle dogs. And they said, well, if this crew is going to get 200 R, fractionated, that is, you'll get, maybe you'll be up there and you'll get maybe 50 R over a few weeks, and then you take another flight and you get 50 R or something. Now, even though they scrubbed this thing, this has application, of course, in a space program, because this is one of the concerns now. If we get a solar flare, if we're out in space and running a solar flare, you're going to have this kind of radiation. In fact, we have an experiment going on right now in our laboratory looking at the solar flare picture, that is the kind of radiation fractionation you get in a solar flare. Well, how does this affect the animal? But what they did, they said, all right, if this crew is going to get 200 R, we'll give 100 R and 300 R to these dogs, either fractionated, that is maybe so much a week or a couple of times a month or something. Well, if you pull all that data together, here is how the curve sort of looks like, that is the number alive. Number of dogs alive with time, huh? And it's sort of like this, and this is all linear. And they come on down here so that half of the dogs are gone after 12 years in a normal colony. And what happened when you gave them 100 OR? These were going along just like this. You know, and for a while they wondered, did they turn the x-ray machine on, you know? But then it sort of peeled off a little bit, and these animals died a little sooner. In fact, the half of them were gone at about, instead of 12 years, this is about 10 and a half. 10 and a half, and if you give them 300 R, there's a little different curve, because you have some early life mortality. In fact, with 300 R, you're going to get quite a few acute deaths. And this is what my experimenters who were at the University of California, I wasn't there when this was done, when they exposed them, but we still have some of the dogs. So half of those were gone after about 9.5 years. So you have about a 10% reduction in lifespan with 100 R, per 100 R. It was another interesting thing that was done, just for you, beagle lovers. They had some excess animals, so they gave them off to people like you who promised to take very good care of these beagles. And what did the curve look like for those people? Well, half of those were gone after 4.5 years. That shows you one thing. It shows you a couple of things. That things are really tough on the outside. And the other thing it shows, we don't allow vehicles, cars, in our pen. A lot of these are accidents, you know, they get run over. But after these dogs get out to about 7 years here, they essentially assume the same curve. The ones that survive that long are going to make it, but these years are tough on them. So that's just the kind of things we do. Well, I've done a lot of work on mice in this, but now let us get to a more important subject. And that is, what is the application of all this for us? I mean, we're getting more and more old people. First, I better give you my... I'll leave that till the end. How are you going to ensure a long life? Or is it important? Maybe I ought to make that question first, but... But how do we handle this? I mean, more and more people will be over 60 with passage of time. How do we handle them? Do we say that, well, when you get to be 65, we ought to pass a law, everybody goes to rest home? And I think how awful that would be. I just look around the village here and how our life has been enriched, you know, by people like Conrad Bergenhoff and our own Dr. Christensen and all. And I visit a lot of rest homes. And there's a lot of people there that I think should be out with the kids, you know, something like the Chinese do. You know, that's where the wisdom, that's where these kids get their wisdom, that's who they play the games with, grandma and grandpa, huh? They're the ones that spend most of the time with them. The parents, the mother is too busy. And this might be a pretty good system. They got time to really enjoy them, and everybody looks forward to being a grandma and grandpa. Here we can stand them for overnight, but that's testing us a little too far if it has to be a week, you know. But what should we be doing about this? And what should be our attitude towards this? And some people, of course, have a great guilt complex in this regard. They like to have grandma with them, but they realize that there are some problems there, and some people are kind of hard to live with, even when they're young, and they don't improve with age. And others want to be independent. In the case of one, my mother-in-law, I mean, she didn't want to live with us, although she likes to visit us. So she spends, she'll come back with us now. But she wanted to stay in the area in which she was raised and spent most of her life. That's where her friends are. And she chose to go to Lutheran Home, which is in Puyallup, which is really a fine place. And of course, that's where her friends come out and see her. And then periodically, when it gets to a drab up there, then she comes down and visits us and spends weeks to months with us. That's a kind of a handy arrangement. I think she likes it. And I think she feels needed. And this is very important. In the case of my mother, she's still living alone, and that's the way she wants it. And we'll make the decisions on what happens when she can't take care of herself later. With my father, who is not too long ago left us, we did take him to a home, and he wasn't really red hot about this, but he had to have hospital type care, and with frequent visits. So this is sort of the experience. But I remember what Conrad Bergenhoff, for example, Bergenhoff told us last summer. I mean, he just didn't want to be in a place where he didn't have children around, you know? And somebody told me this morning, I told you, be sure to bring it up, yeah, about the grandmother program, you know?
Yes. In Spokane, there's a Lakeland Village, which is a school or home for retired children, and one older woman we know who had to have psychiatric treatment herself and did recover, she was telling me not long ago that she has joined a program there of retired people who go out every day. They take a whole busload of them, and they serve as grandparents for these children. Each child is each adult is assigned one child, and the children just look forward to it and are very possessive about each one, about his or her own grandmother or grandfather. And the change in this woman is just fantastic. You could just see the sparkle in her eyes when she was telling me about this, how this little girl that she has looks forward to her visit every day.
Yeah, I think that's a wonderful thing. They have to feel needed. And there is an advantage also among some of these people, psychological problems, but they always worry about themselves and the problems they have, all the problems and all the things that's happening to them, the deterioration, and they always think about their troubles. It's like Carol says, you know, when you're carrying your own problems, they're much heavier than the problems of somebody else's. And you can trade those for somebody else's problems, the problems of your brother or sister. And the load becomes lighter, and you can take longer steps. It also saves shoe leather. But in this case, you know, like I know in my mother-in-law, she, I mean, she sees so many people who are worse off than she is, you know. She didn't kind of help them. And, okay. Come back and push like that. Anybody else want to say anything about this?
I'm just thinking what New Yorkers said, you know, how they had the police dogs guarding the places where you put the old people in New York, but they throw them over the fence at night. This kind of society, this mocking kind of society, which doesn't want to realize it's growing older, doesn't want to have four faces around the mind, and the years just make them be old. This is kind of a horror that you feel when you travel, for instance, to a Spanish civilization or Portuguese one, or, you know, where they're all in front of you. Not even suddenly you're aware of what society looks like again. You realize how you've been protected. Almost like in Buddha, who wasn't shown any suffering. I mean, this has gotten to be our attitude, kind of. And you do the best for your kids by protecting them from any idea that this will never happen to you, brother. I feel bad for this, not because it's good for us to suffer, but I think it's cheap because of the richness of life.
Yes, sir.
Our whole just carry that on the ship, our whole way of food and fuel. They say a denial of death, and they hate this guy all up and all up for this.
We'll get to that subject on Thursday.
We'll
talk about death on Thursday and how to face it.
Christmas is wearing your glasses.
Pardon?
They always put the glasses on.
Activity and feeling useful and the relationship to senility, would you comment on that or how?
Yes, it's very important to maintain activity, and this is part of my prescription for a long life. I mean, so many, and I'm sure that many of you are acquainted with people, and I've seen so many of them, you know, especially farmers, you know. I sort of feel bad about this in the case of my father. I mean, everybody insisted that they kind of moved to town, you know, off the small farm, because things were just kind of hard there, you know. This was probably a mistake in many ways, you know. He was always hankering to be back on the farm, and although he was driving a car on beyond 80, probably he shouldn't have been, but he was. They finally put a kibosh on him and had him restricted as to how many miles he could go. But he probably would have been better off if he had a few more hardships, you know, and more activity, although he did keep quite active. But so many people, you know, they get off the farm, they go to the city, and die, huh, because of inactivity.
And at least I read some things about people having arteriosclerosis, but having them yet to be so active that it doesn't affect them mentally. And yet, this man experiences a lady who was a very well-respected, excellent teacher, and sometimes I did know her when she was a teacher, and had to be retired. And, you know, just completely, I thought, physically quite well, but unable to communicate mentally ill from
appearing. And I think that's true with even people my age. I had a secretary once. She maintained that because I missed very few days at work, at least up till now. I probably missed 3 days of work for sickness for the past 18 years. Well, this is kind of remarkable, but she always maintained that it wasn't because I was so healthy, but because I didn't have time to get sick. You know, because if you keep busy enough, you know, you don't. Of course, maybe I'll miss tomorrow, you know, when I say this, but there's some truth to this. I mean, you must maintain active, and I'll give my prescription here in a minute.
Sometimes the first people go to her home. I mean, her husband retired.
Yes, keep going. That's true. I mean, the mother does maintain activity. Of course, the predicted lifespan for females is about 5 or 6 at least more years than man. But why I bring this up, because remember Dave, who was in camp here, this Jewish agnostic, you know, he was a very interesting fellow. I had quite a talk with him. And he's typical of quite a few people in this regard. He was asking me about some of the subjects I discussed, you know. And I told him I discussed aging and so on, and sort of lifespan and this kind of thing. And he became intensely interested. Boy, he would hardly let me go. I said, well, just how does one ensure a longer life, you know? And it's like, boy, this is one thing I got to have, you know. I mean, how do you do this? I mean, and he was asking me about all these things about, well, just what kind of exercise should you do? Is my hiking in the mountains good, you know? Or do you have, you know, I was telling him about what I do at night sometimes. I go out and run there in the summer. I swim. But one of the prescriptions I give is that you must exercise. You must have exercise and not the weekend warrior stuff, you know, where boys charge up there. I mean, you go all out on Saturday or Sunday, and then the rest of the time you're really not with it. It's very important to exercise. Walking is very good exercise when you get old, I think. But some jogging is also important to get your heart up to a certain speed. In my case, if I just, after a meal, if I just took off, I go into atrial fibrillation. And this is a very disturbing thing. So I don't do much to that anymore, and that's why I'm down in the volleyball court. It's a game I really love to do, love to play.
What do you call it? That big word.
Atrial fibrillation. That is your the top part of your heart. The atrium goes your pulse starts you know, like this. You feel kind of funny.
It's a very...
No, I didn't really act quite that way.
Leo, I do want to ask you one thing, though, and that's this business of this report that when people will retire, how satisfied the women are, and how dissatisfied the women are, and how satisfied the men are. And that's why I've been wondering about why I desire to live so much longer. The older you, the more men and women live together, don't you, for the less desirable a man is to the woman, and the more desirable a woman is to the man. You find it up where the man isn't chasing, and he's very happy with this one woman, and the woman is waiting for the guy to die, so she's like the boo, and then being her little friend. Now, this is what the sociological reports are. This is a little old water.
Well, I haven't heard much of this. So I probably haven't read the report. But I feel if there are some social sciences here available or present, I should say that I feel that one of our real problems today, I can't figure out why. We have very serious social problems, and I haven't quite figured out whether it's because of the social sciences or in spite of them. But I'm sure it's because of some of them. And so this might be one of those, but maybe this is true. It depends how honest the report was, or how honest the people were. Maybe it just shows that the women are more honest than the men. I don't know.
Well, according to this report, I heard about 1 o'clock in Detroit on TV. That the majority of retired people, the woman is unhappy, and we envy the widow of men. And the man is very happy, and glad to be content.
Yeah, well,
drive through, and we have
you know what part it is, and part of it is true, you know. And I talk to quite a few people like this. You know, it's kind of a nice life when the husband isn't around much, you know. I mean, he's off at work. But then he retires and he's home underfoot all the time, you know. Well, I get this guy out of underfoot, you know. I mean, it's a real problem. I mean, it's a complete change in life. And absence makes the heart grow fonder. And that's why I'm fairly successful in my married life. I'm gone quite a bit. Homecomings are lovely, you know. So that's that. Now, I didn't finish my prescription. I know Rosemary's really hot to go here. All right, now, I mentioned that the exercise is important and not real fatiguing exercise. I mean, you can take this when you're young, but as you get older, you don't want to overdo it, you know? I mean, like I say, this is a camp, not a retreat camp, but an endurance contest, and you know, after about 10 days here, I'm completely done in, so I have to go up and lay down for a while, because I think I'm finding out now, where I didn't earlier, that, well, when I'm done in, sometimes I have to just sit down and just say, boy, I got to rest for a while. I have a big red chair in my office, a big soft chair that guests can use. But sometimes I have it there for myself. And when the problems get too big or I'm just sort of done in, I sit down in it and I just say, all right, God, you put me there. You put me here. Now it's your turn for a while, you know. Because I'm sort of at the end of the line for a while, you know. Sometimes, yeah, you've got to know when to do this. You can't go it alone. The other thing is, I'm not particularly interested in living a long time, and I think the Greeks had it. You know, they divided time into chronos and kairos. And chronos was just the time as we measured by the clock. But I like the kairos kind of a thing where... because it's such a wonderful word, you measure it in terms of experiences, you know. I mean, you measure your life on the basis of experiences and not time as we know it. And I think this is a good way to do it, and I'd probably end up having a longer time too. But the times when you fell in love or you fell in love with Holden, I mean, these are high points and these are the real experiences of life, and this is how we measure the fullness of life. I wanted to get that in there. The other thing is, it's sort of how we eat. I mean, we are what we eat sort of thing. And we have a lot to learn there. We mentioned the other night that the problem of hunger in the world. Well, we have a nutrition problem in the United States, but it isn't hunger in many places. We do have some hunger, but the problem is overeating. Huh? Overeating. We eat far too much unsaturated fat. We eat too much butter. We take in too high caloric intake, you know, I mean, too much sugar and this type of thing. Far too much. And this is something that this will get to you. And it isn't all fats. It's also caloric intake. You have to exercise and reduce your caloric intake. And another thing, it's something I do, because I'm not a... do probably what I say rather than what I do, but I eat about five times a day, and I usually don't eat, you know, a real big meal, and this is a good thing. I think we'll eventually, I hope we finally get to this. It isn't good for us to eat a great big meal, you know. We do it all the time, you know. I mean, boy, we really look forward to this. I don't know if I want to change the Holden habits here. It's enough to do dishes three times a day, you know. But it's important not to eat too much at one sitting, and then eat more frequently. Anything anybody else? It's time for Rosemary.
Well, you know, one little thing I have, because it comes up again, get as people did, they feel so kind of under the law of all they don't know, they got to get new with it again, and so on. And they forget that one of the great delights in life is take a nap or anything. I mean, you don't have to stay awake for everything.
Yeah, no, that's right.
Just unwind it a little bit. And my grandma commented to me before I ever got away from high school, I thought it was sin to take a nap in the day. She can tell you there's a syndicate did take a fight right now. She really got that through to me. She brought 14 kids on and stayed there really alive. Great gal right in 97. Still arguing gal at the group. So then this ability to just unwind as we go.
Just to lay down and just let go. Now, I'm going to do this in my office. I'm going to put a pad there where I can do this. I keep saying I'm going to do this. But this is a very good thing. You know?
And these two Chinese proverbs that I could call home at that point there. Before Da Lao Xie, Da Lao Hai San, Kong Xie, Bu Da. Live a long life, study all the time, and still punch these things. Still pretty good. And the other one is a good one too. You call home and responsibility. Don't worry, go slow, just go stand still. And the Chinese have heard something.
I wish I could find the. Well, I can't. I mean, you got my other George MacDonald. That's all right. I have it marked. There's a very good thing on George MacDonald. I'll give you. You can give it to him next year. He has something to say about this. Maybe I'll mention it.
Yeah, time to write the extra.
Pardon?
It's time to write the extra.
Yeah. I mean, don't worry about being so gung ho, you know, all the time, wound all up. Well, yes.
Something I saw posted in the doctor's office I thought was rather apropos. Do not regret growing old. It is a privilege denied to many.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
I served with a fellow once and he said, the best thing the good Lord ever did is to command for you to lay down. And he pulled himself on his cot right after his meal for 5 minutes.
Okay, do you want them to stand up and stretch? You want to start them off with awake, don't you, Rosemary?
No, everybody's
going to